Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Rain Stop Play. Thank you very much for joining us. This week will be a bit of a catch-up because we've been away for a couple of weeks, just chatting about what's going on. And then we've got a big pitch inspection talking about the shape of international and domestic cricket and how those two things are going to coincide with each other over the next decade plus. A couple of really good pieces we've got to chat off. It will be a full Rain Stop Play shortly. Will be joining us, but I'm going to start by saying hello to Glenn. What's going on?
All right, not much, to be honest. It's been quite quiet. A bit of work here and there.
Any sport for us to dive into?
That's exactly the thing. I'm getting my pre-season ready for my full footy league. So we've stopped the summer one. Ultimate Frisbee's finished as well. I was hoping you wouldn't come to me first because I have such little to offer. But don't worry, listeners, because I know Dan will have some good playing stories in just a moment.
I very rarely do. Zach, how you doing? Anything for us this week?
Yeah, I played a game maybe about 10 days ago now, T20 game, bowled myself, I've been captaining, but I haven't really been bowling myself. And I bowled myself, and yeah, bowling's not been good. Glenn's reacting. Glenn remembers me at under 11s, you know, it was good then. But yeah, I bowled myself, and I took a wicket with an in-swinging Yorker that hit off stump. So as a left armer, I've retired from all cricket now. I think I'm never going to bowl a better ball than that. So that's it. Me done. Career over.
So I can jump in here because I was watching Ireland, South Africa, the T20 yesterday, which was really good fun. It was a cracking game. And Zach, you reminded me of George Dockrell, who used to play for our beloved Somerset, because he started out, you know, teenager, left arm slow. I know you were left arm slow fast, I imagine. But but he completely, I feel like just like you, he effectively completely retooled himself. He's now a pretty big hitting kind of middle order batter, and he doesn't really bowl much. He bowls very, very occasionally. So it was a funny parallel. I forget because growing up, Dan, Zach was always a bowler, you know, either opening or first change, and we would bat pretty low down the order. So it's interesting how you've switched that around.
What's it like bowling yourself as captain, Zach? Is it tough? Do you struggle to bring yourself on, or do you back yourself?
Well, so I do struggle to bring myself on, and in the first game I did it, I bowled an 18 run over, including two, you know, shoulder high full tosses that got smacked back over my head for six. So I was like, that's it, that's me done for a while. And I, you know, just haven't had any confidence for myself on since, really, until
an in-swinging Yorker hits off stump. Excellent. Well, I did play cricket this week for the first time once in May. I only fill in for my mate's village team when they're short. Wanted to fill in, we bowled first. I wanted to fill in for a couple of overs, but my mate, who was captain, bowled himself and went at 12s. That's his own fault for six overs. I could have filled in three of them. You never know. Anyway, bat at six. So actually, I was umpiring. I love umpiring. It was a 45 over side game. Umpiring is so much fun. Second ball, there was a thirds game, and they had a first team bowler in just because he was away the week before and wanted a game. And bowls his left arm, like Sam Curran-esque left arm, that started outside off stump, swung to hit top and middle. And I've seen our opening batter go to that one. Okay, great, whatever. Anyway, I'm in at 28 for four. Not great. I don't net or practice or anything. This guy's still bowling. Yeah, the open ball's still on. Survive a couple of deliveries. Then I see a nice and wide one. I'm going to leave that alone. We're in a bit of trouble here. Jags back, death rattle. So I've shouldered arms and a bit bowled. However, boys, no ball. Out comes the right arm of the standing umpire, and he's overstepped. Would you believe it? never ever happened to me before. It's something you very rarely see.
Village cricket, a no ball in village cricket.
And I've properly shouldered arms to like one that's nipped back. So I was like, oh my God, I got a second chance here. Two balls later, missed a straight one, LBW, see you later. Thanks for coming, 9-6. We lost in a 45 over a side game by just under 200 runs. We conceded 275 and got, 270 and got bowled out for 73.
Hey, Dan, don't worry about that. We got hit for 406 a couple of weeks ago and got bowled out for 80 on like one of the really, really hot days. It was
in
horrendous.
A T20.
Bloke hit 180 from about 110 balls, not out. Was seeing it like an absolute beach ball.
That's insane. That's
I'd bowl top of off to him and he'd just smack it straight up over my head. It would come out and I'd be like, oh, that's a decent enough ball. Surely he might just, you know, single. Nope, gone.
Gone. Well, you know, that actually makes me feel a lot better. So thank you for that. And I love village cricket. It's the most fun day ever. You can get battered and just have so much fun and get no runs and not bowl and not take a catch as I did. But I had the most fun. And a couple of good umpiring decisions, actually. I think I make a good umpire, to be fair.
I had the worst thing to do as an umpire. I had to give out our opening bat, who was on about 40. He was sweeping, hit his back leg,
plump.
And it was like so plump. I was like, you're going so well.
It's one of them where I think even on my LBW decision, someone on our team was obviously umpiring and he said, listen, mate, it was like so plump. It would have been offensive if I hadn't. You know, those ones, the tight ones, you can just say not out for now. Yeah. Anyway, that was good fun. And village cricket is great. And we love the sport so much. But that's our exploits this week. Let's talk about some professional cricket. Let's have a catch up, boys. What have we missed? Should we start with 100 that started last night? Because that's fresh in our brains. An awful game, a terrible game of cricket. I know Southern Brave won. Welsh Fire got like 70 odd, maybe, no, 80, 100. It was like a runnable, two runnable innings that were really, really boring. And I don't know, what's the vibe in your boys' mind around the 100 this year? For me, it's like live golf. If you're following this new Saudi league in golf, like, it's not going to go away. And we have to kind of live with it now as part of the ecosystem of cricket. Obviously, the 100 isn't funded by Saudis that we're aware of. But I think I've come to accept the 100 for what it is. And that it's a great day out when I went. I really enjoyed that. But it just doesn't feel like it's got the warmth of the cricket community yet. I don't know what you boys think about this.
Well, I mean, to start off with, they keep doing exceptionally obnoxious things like basically steamrolling over the lovely fantasy draft 100 game, which a lot of folks in the cricket community, Zach and I included, were very, very excited to play. Now, I don't know how much of this is speculation or fact or whatever else, but it seems to me, from my personal perspective here, quite clear that the 100 obviously had their partner with some other fantasy game, and in the couple of days leading up to the start of the season, like literally like a couple of days ago, said to the people at the draft who did such a fantastic job with the blast, who've been doing a continually fantastic job with the county championship, who have a professional machine, a professional like mode of playing fantasy sport. I can't stress how much I enjoyed it playing the blast. It was outrageously good. And they've effectively told them, seems from my perspective, to they've been told to jog on by the ECB in the 100 because they have this partner with another fantasy game, which was released like literally a day or two before the actual tournament started. So little things like that, right, Dan? So I was going to give the 100 the time of day. Again, you know, I think you don't need to go into how ridiculous I think the format is, but I was going to give it a time of day because I love fantasy and I was really buzzing to follow the teams. And Zach and I had a lovely 2 hours, you know, quick Zoom, just chatting away, making our team. Loads of fun. And most people who play the game had probably already made their team. So people have already invested time, not to say, not a fraction of the time that the people at the draft have put in planning it, but everyone was really buzzing about this game. And the fact that it was effectively, you know, rug pulled from under it, blindsided at the last minute, was ridiculous. And for that reason, among many others, I am not even going to be watching a second of it. I was tempted to give yesterday's game 30 minutes, but Ireland versus South Africa, as I just mentioned, was a lot more fun. It was T20. I was really enjoying that game. And it was a woeful opening fixture. It
so
was
bad.
Dull. It was one-sided. It was slow. It was boring. I mean, I looked at the live text and scorecard and stuff, so I had a feel for what was going on. It was tragic. So that is absolute karma. And Johnny Bairstow effectively giving them the middle finger as well was fantastic because it's the start they deserve after doing little things like that.
Yeah, you're right about that, Glenn, about trying to get the cricket community on side and taking away one of their favourite fantasy games just because they're the bigger behemoth in all of this. Doesn't really help, does it? And yeah, they'd have been gutted. Like the people above would have been gutted about that game because they'd all know that was a rubbish game of cricket that doesn't help start the season well, the 100 season. Zach, 100 thoughts, please.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to give it a go. I'm going to watch it. I thought yesterday's game was, like you said, Dan, the absolute antithesis of what they wanted. It's a much more even game if Bairstow plays. It's just, I mean, Welsh Fire did terribly, basically. It was a terrible start. I mean, although you can say, I remember there was a couple of years ago when the IPL started in basically the exact same fashion where Chennai spun out. I can't even remember who it was, like they always used to do, for no runs. And it was just like, oh, is this what we're watching for 2 months? I hope tonight's game will be a little bit more exciting, although it's still going to be relatively one-sided.
London derby tonight, right? Oval.
Well, they're all derbies. All these first four games are all derbies. We've got.
Oh, I forgot that Southern Brave versus Welsh Fire was a hotly contested derby, of course.
Exactly,
oh, I forgot about that. That's now wound me up a bit more, actually.
Yeah, and then we've got the Midlands derby on Saturday, and we've got the Northern derby tomorrow. So okay. I think both of these first two games, if it was down to me, I would have gone the other two games to start with, because I think Oval Invincibles are a much stronger side. You know, London Spirit and Welsh Fire are the two weakest teams, so shouldn't have really expected that to be that close. Southern Brave potentially looking a little bit weaker this year because they had Archer last time, but Mills is injured. Garton's been pretty atrocious for the last year since the 100. But yeah, I think Oval Invincibles, very, very good side. They basically got all the best Surrey players and then Sunil Narine and Riley Rousseau. So that's a very good team. I think London Spirit are probably going to be awful again, which is quite funny. Having a really bad team, but they were so bad, and that's funny. I feel like every tournament needs one of them. You know, the BBL would be nothing without Melbourne Renegades because they're terrible. It wouldn't be the same if you didn't have them stinking out the place every time. And yeah, I'm obviously backing my Northern Superchargers for the title. DJ Bravo's going to bowl everyone out.
Okay. That's kind of the perfect. I'm glad we didn't do a preview pod because I think what Zach's minute or so there's
basically
perfect
done
for me.
A preview.
Yeah. That's perfect.
Sums it up.
That's all. I think that's what everybody needs to know. And listen, if you want to enjoy the 100, go good for you. Enjoy it. I think I sit somewhere between Glenn and Zach. I'm going to give it a go, but they're going to have to win me over quite hard. I just find it slightly cringe. The coverage is a bit cringe. I don't know what it is. It's just a jarring experience. And did anyone catch Ollie Pope, who I think was mic'd up for, you know, good television reasons, telling them to shut up because I think they left a feed in his ear while he was trying to field. So that was funny. Q sort of, you know, whenever I hear KP on comms kind of tweets. So yeah, that's our 100 chat basically. Shall we move on then? We've not been on, boys, since I think we've missed two T20 internationals between England and South Africa. South Africa winning both and winning the series 2-1. We've done a bit of this now, but I think it's worth wrapping it up because that's the end of the white ball summer, I think, as far as I'm aware, it is. We've got a few test matches, then we're off to Pakistan. The general malaise around the white ball team, it's just been a bit, I don't know what it is. And my theory, and feel free to agree or disagree with this, is it's Jason Roy's fault. And him opening the batting in the edgiest way possible has just sort of reverberated down the team. And the batting hasn't quite been at it. On the flip side of that, I read a good piece this week saying that actually the bowlers haven't been doing the work and we should be pointing more at them. And the fact we've conceded about one, I think it was 190 plus in all of the T20s this summer so far, something like that. There's been a lot. So there's a lot wrong with this England team. And I want to hear, Glenn, what you think about this, because whenever a white ball tournament comes around, and there is one coming up very soon, a T20 World Cup, England are always in the top probably two, maybe three, who've got their hands on it already, sort of thing, if you know what I mean. Feels like we're nowhere near that right now. Feels like we're really not going to really contend at the next one, at least. Am I being too dramatic?
Potentially. I mean, I think what gets me, and I imagine us too as well, is the frustration around having such a fantastic squad, right? Having a really, really talented squad. Having, effectively, you've got backups who are fantastic as well. But you look at that 11 on paper, the one that pretty much was quite similar throughout the India and South Africa home series, neither of which obviously we won. And you're just like, why is it not working? Why is it not clicking? We were bowled out in four of our six T20s this summer, which is kind of pathetic if you think in 20 over. I mean, being bowled out, I mean, dare I say, again, we'd love to have the stats on hand here, is relatively rare in T20 in the sense that, you know, usually if you get games like pretty one-sided, sure, it might kind of peter out. But to be bowled out so consistently in over half of our games in home conditions with a batting lineup over, like, brimming with talent and exciting batters. I mean, it just feels a little bit pathetic, really. It just feels like we weren't fully invested for some reason. There was no cohesion. I think you're right. As much as we sometimes kind of hate to, you know, pick up on individuals, I think Roy got almost every innings off to such a lackluster start right down. He was edgy, he was tetchy, he was, you know, he just had absolutely no rhythm to his innings. And what this England white ball team has done in recent years, ODIs and T20s, is those opening two batters, Jason Roy, chief among them with Bairstow and or Butler, have absolutely terrified opposition bowlers during the power play by just smashing them out of the game, by getting us off to such a roaring start that it's easy to come in at 3, 4, 5, 6 because there's runs on the board and we have a high run rate. It completely falls apart when our middle order comes in and they're under pressure because the run rate's already in the 10s, 11s, 12s. And that's where I think the whole plan fell apart. So sure, we can blame Jason Roy for getting us off to a bad start. But Dan, I would like to see the calibre of our middle order take some actual responsibility and accountability and pick up Roy's slack. Every single one-day player is going to come in and have a bad patch of form. I'm not screaming for Roy to be dropped. I'm screaming for other people in the team to work collectively instead of as individuals. It felt like a very selfish England team this summer.
Yeah, I love that point, Glenn. That's exactly how I feel, I think. And it's interesting that the middle order has never had to pick up the slack, and when it was needed to be done, they didn't do it. I think it's a really good point. Zach, your thoughts? You agree with that? That Roy's tone setting hasn't helped this summer at all? And again, I do like to emphasize we don't want to really point fingers, but that's what this discussion is about at the minute. Are we being too harsh on him? Is there a wider issue, perhaps?
I think Roy's always kind of had a bit of a flawed record in T20 cricket. I feel like he's always been viewed as a player he seemed like he was perfect for T20 cricket because of his 50 over form. But he's never really, like, he had troubles against spin and he kind of sorted that out. He had a good year last year. But yeah, I think it's probably his time's nearing an end. One interesting one is Liam Livingstone's really dropped off in T20 eyes this summer. Last year, he scored 230 runs at a very, very healthy strike rate, averaging 33. This year, he's only scored 100, played one extra game this year as well. Strike rate's way down, average is down at 14. So obviously he had an unbelievable start to his career. He wasn't going to be able to keep that up, but he really hasn't performed.
It's a big drop off, isn't it? And then his bowling as well. Do you want to chat about his bowling or lack thereof? There seems slightly reluctance to go to him now. Am I right in saying that? Or is it just a bit of a fall off in general because he started so hot last year?
Yeah, I think the bowling in general is difficult. I think he's definitely more of a bowler that when things are going okay, you can try and sneak a couple overs in. I don't think he's never been thought of as a frontline bowler. He's a bowler who can fit a couple overs in. So I think when things are going badly, he's not the type of bowler you want to turn to. He's the type of bowler you want to turn to when things are going okay, they're not going at too, you know, they've not kicked on yet. Let's try and sneak a couple overs in. So yeah, I don't think we can really fault him for his bowling. I think his bowling will be very limited in Australia, to be honest. I can't think of many times when he bowled that much in the Big Bash. And I think it's more kind of down to whether Ben Stokes comes back in, which I think he will, and his overs being more important in Australia. But we said this last year that when it came to the UAE, Liam Livingstone was kind of the Ben Stokes of the UAE for England. And now, yes, if we can fit both of them in the side, great. Obviously, Roy potentially is dropping out. Who comes in for Roy, whether that is just straight stop for
Salt.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Whether that's a straight swap for Stokes, or we go, obviously Vince has been having an absolutely fantastic year. Don't know, kind of feel like he's had his chance.
One last go. One more ride for Vince into the sunset, surely.
He also does have a brilliant record in the Big Bash. I think the Big Bash isn't necessarily the highest quality league, but it's those conditions.
Yeah, for sure. I forgot. That's a good point. That I like that a lot. And the bowling, I don't know what to say about, because they've just not been getting wickets, really, have they? There's been no early wickets. There's been no mid wickets or end wickets. Chris Jordan's showing what he can do on time and time again. And then when he misses those Yorkers, he goes for a lot. Rashid went back-to-back zero wicket games at the end of that T20 series. Moeen goes for a bit. You know, there's just no wickets coming from anywhere. And I'm getting to a point now where we can't, yes, there's injuries, but like these guys should still be able to do that sort of job, right?
I think for me, Rashid is the big worry because he was such a banker. Moeen is kind of inconsistent. He's decent. You know, again, he's a decent, like, if there's two left-handers at the crease, Moeen's a decent option.
Yeah.
But again, I don't think we should ever be in a position where we're like, we have to have four overs out of Moeen. Four overs out of Rashid, where he goes for, you know, 30 and takes a couple of wickets. That was kind of a banker, like an absolute minimum. Now that seems to have fallen off. The pace bowling is a big, big worry. We're obviously missing a lot of people. Topley's good. I still haven't decided whether he is really good or if he's just having one of those summers. Hopefully it may continue till the end of the year. That's fine. But other than that, the pace bowling's pretty poor. Gleeson can bowl quick, but doesn't seem to have any change-ups. So don't know about that. I love the story, but I think it's not going to work. Mills is probably going to be injured. Don't think we can rely on him. Wood is aiming to be fit for then as well. Probably not going to be. Archer, will he ever play for England again? The thing is, I think this is the thing. Like that, those were all of our options last year. And the pace bowlers we are playing, I know you said they should still be doing good. They should still be able to do a job. They are not good. They're not as good.
Yeah.
They're not as good players. And Jordan is not as good as he was a few years ago. On big grounds in Australia, I've said previously, big grounds in Australia, he can go, should be able to go to the kind of hard lengths, which has been working better for him. That's when he's been better this year. So hopefully we can go to that and Jordan will be okay.
Yeah. Bit of an A-minus team then, Glenn, with the bowlers injured and not quite being there. And then you put on top of that the change of captaincy and the change of leadership at the coach level as well. And it's like a transitional period. You see it in American sport, like a team will be crap for a season because they got new personnel and no draft picks and new coach, etc. And maybe we shouldn't be so highly expectant of England when all this is going on.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think, you know, you both had some really nice analysis here that I totally agree with. It does feel like, end of an era, a kind of stop, and almost talked about the red ball, reset, restart. Mm. Well, what about the white ball team here? Mm. I mean, I think, Zach, you've pointed out really nicely that it is, generally speaking, just looking at the scorecard for the last game, it's quite, to some degrees, is maybe quite an aging team. That bowling unit especially doesn't seem to have many kind of young guns who you're really buzzing for the next, say, 5, 6, 7 years. It seems to be players who are probably just dropping off, i.e. arguably maybe Jordan, people similar to that who've played that position, who are just maybe dropping off, who are just post the peak of their career. They're still great on their day. They're still world class. But they're going to have more bad games across a series and across a tournament than they would have arguably maybe 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
So maybe throw Rashid in there. I'm not saying in any way his quality is fully dipped or anything like that, but at least on form, there does seem to be a correlation between maybe some of the more senior members of the team aren't at their highest standard, which we're used to seeing, which we're just completely used to seeing. So that's kind of difficult. And again, it just, yeah, you know, is the motivation there? Is the leadership there? It's really difficult to kind of piece together the issues here. I do think a bit of young blood, I think, would be really helpful. You know, maybe like a Will Smead or something along those lines, like some really exciting young English players. I'm not saying dropping people across the team or anything, but just to inject a bit of new energy into the unit. They tried it with Tom Banton, for example. It didn't quite click. But Gleeson is a really interesting example of they're going the other route, which I don't disagree with on paper, which is you're picking the form people from the domestic league, which I like. So I liked that Gleeson was in there. I'm not saying age is a factor here at all, but I think having watched him in the games, I don't think he's quite, I was hoping he would be, but I don't think he's quite at that kind of international calibre that maybe we were hoping. I think you were spot on, Zach, you might have said it. He's quick. He is lightning quick, but he just doesn't seem to have possibly the variations that are just going to keep batters honest at the absolute highest standard. So yeah, it just feels like we're slightly post our best team. First time we've lost, we haven't won a series at home in the white ball since 2013. So, you know, that's almost the end of an era, 10 years,
that's,
right?
That's an era. And that was an awful white ball team, wasn't it? That went into, well, mm-hmm. No, that was a transitional white ball team at the time in 2013. Mm-hmm. So very good. It's interesting how when we had all the new coaches and Rob Key coming in, we were like, the white ball team will look after itself. Mott's got the easiest job on the planet. How that narrative has entirely changed over a couple of months. But it's interesting. And we'll see how they get on.
Yeah, just interested. Obviously, I like Glenn's point about young blood. And I think the young bowlers is such an interesting thing because no one comes to mind. No one who can bowl at the death comes to mind.
No.
You know, there's always someone in the blast who can bowl up top, or it generally works, but the death, no one. I mean, death bowling is just really hard. So lots of people aren't very good at it, basically. To put simply, I think the only person who kind of stood out for me would be Scrimshaw. But again, wasn't bowling at the death. He was just, you know, hard lengths through at the top and in the middle. Looked really good, and we'll be interested to see how he goes in the 100. But yeah, other than that, can't really think of anyone who could come in.
And don't even start us on future spin options when Rashid eventually calls it a day. I mean, this is real lack of depth at the minute. Rehan Ahmed, maybe? Ah, there we go. Zach's nodding away. I'm excited about him. And he is in the 100, right, Rehan Ahmed? Can someone help me out? Where's he playing? So I can look out for him.
Southern Brave. Him and Linton in the same side.
Oh, wow. Spin twins. Love it. I was going to do this to start part two, but hello, Will. He's just joined us on the chat. Before we end part one and go into part two, could we have your 100 thoughts? I just asked the boys at the top, like, just thoughts on the 100 starting now. What are your vibes around it? And hello.
Oh, no, this is terrible, but speaks volumes, probably. I've not watched a ball.
We were saying, what's your plan to maybe... Oh, okay, that's even...
Until someone posted in Rage.play chat, because I just hadn't paid attention.
And that's. I remember last year, weren't you at the first game? You gave us that lovely little video report outside the ground afterward. What a change in a year. That's actually a really interesting point that I almost wanted to make, that like we had the hype of it last year of like, wow, we're fascinated. Like we've just found some kind of weird dead animal near the train tracks. We're poking it with a stick. What is this? What is the 100? And now we're kind of bored of that. And that kind of, you kind of summed that up perfectly there.
Yeah, when it's shiny and new, everyone's inherently interested. And as soon as it isn't, the novelty wears off. But I still think, like, fundamentally, I think someone had a good tweet on that yesterday, who I can't credit because I don't remember who it was. But basically to the effect of, like, it's enjoyable enough because it's cricket, so I'll watch it. And I am still excited. I'm going to get tickets for the Oval for one of the games. And still all about the doubleheaders. No?
Sold out.
They're all sold out.
Yeah, which is kind of mad.
I got my first game tickets the night before last year.
Yeah, which is interesting, but careful, because at Southampton last night they said it was sold out, and that's if 5,000 people came dressed as seats, then yeah, that's fair. But you might be able to sneak a ticket here or there. Okay, really quickly to wrap up part one after that quick 100 chat. The Commonwealth Games is happening in Birmingham. I've been to a few events. Birmingham's got the 2012 Olympic buzz. Nowhere else outside of Birmingham, but Birmingham has. I went to the beach volleyball, as you do. Great fun. Zach, you've been watching a bit of the Commonwealth Games. Obviously, women's T20 cricket all happening at Edgbaston. Games have been fairly well attended from what I can tell. I think the Commonwealth Games largely has had very good attendances from the great people of Birmingham and the surrounding Midlands. Talk us through what's happened, if anything interesting, and where we're at coming out of the pool games now, I think.
Yeah, so we're coming out of the group stage. There's one more game which will have happened by the time you listen to this, which is unfortunate timing. England are playing against New Zealand. That will decide who tops their group and who then... Both those teams are through. Australia and India through in the other group. No real surprises. South Africa look quite bad in general. They did batter Sri Lanka this morning, though. Australia very good. Australia had a real scare in their first game against India, though. They were like 40 for 5 and really struggling. But it's good that they backed down to 10. So they managed to get over the line there pretty comfortably in the end. Yep, I'm going to a game on Saturday. It is the second semi-final. But they haven't said whether it's, you know, like first group A versus second group B or anything like that.
Yeah,
it's
weird.
TBA, which is really annoying me. And I keep checking, being like... Am I seeing Australia or am I seeing India? I mean, either way, it should be a good game. So I'm looking forward to it. And I will be in Birmingham soaking up the atmosphere.
Yeah, mate, the games are awesome. Get stuck in. There's a good vibe around the place at the minute. And the final for that is on the Sunday, I think. So we'll have some medalists, which is good fun. Good luck to England. That'll about do for part one then. In part two, we have a big pitch inspection talking about cricket for the next 20 years. We'll see you in a minute.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, welcome back to part two. Thank you for joining us. Next 30 minutes or so, a big pitch inspection where we dive deep into an article that's interested us this week. And as I said at the end of part one, we're talking big here. We're going big picture. And the relationship between T20 domestic leagues and international cricket and how that's sort of starting to change and starting to weigh more in favour of domestic leagues, getting this time off in the year and how we're going to sort it, basically. Will, I'm going to let you start, and I rudely didn't introduce you. Well, no, I sort of jettisoned you into part one unannounced, but welcome to the podcast, and help us out with this piece, because there's a lot of discourse to be had here.
Thank you. Yeah, I think this is really, really interesting. So credits to Tim Wigmore for writing these for us. He did it specifically so that we could discuss it on the podcast. He's good like that.
Cheers, Tim.
But he's been prolific in the last week or so, writing two articles about kind of the rise of player power and franchise cricket and potentially elbowing out some of the international game. So the most recent of those has the great headline, "The Rising Power of T20 Leagues and the Death Knell for International Cricket," which starts with a pretty punchy sentence that I think we can get stuck into, because I think there's a lot of arguments that could be made about this. But he starts by saying the long golden age of international cricket is at an end. And the argument being, kind of as we know, franchise cricket taking up increasingly more of the annual schedule, less time for international cricket potentially. And he previously in the first piece reports on this story that franchise teams, in particular from the IPL, are trying to contract players now for 12 months. So, you know, in the same way that we've seen in various leagues around the world, Venky Mysore from KKR in the IPL is obsessed with buying as many teams as he possibly can. They will just contract people to say you're playing in every single franchise league around the world for our affiliate teams. That's the idea. And there's some interesting things in this piece. For example, like he kind of shuffles in there that he wants the 100 to open itself up to private investment so that they can buy a team in the 100, which I don't know, will that ever happen? But there's some, I mean, in some ways the case makes itself. So Tim writes, evidence of this shift is not hard to find. So he cites, for example, South Africa recently cancelling ODI matches in Australia so that they can have their own new T20 tournament. He cites David Warner reportedly requesting to be released from his Cricket Australia contract for the height of the home summer so that he can play in the UAE T20 league. So in a way, there's lots of kind of things in there that I think are hard to disagree with. Certainly, you know, in some ways it makes sense to move towards a lot more of the calendar being franchise cricket. We kind of expect that based on the trends that we've seen. Is the ultimate destination for that cricket starts to look a bit more like football, with international World Cups and key test series punctuating what's fundamentally a club cricket year based around the franchises?
I enjoyed that analogy he brought up, and it's such an interesting idea, and like it's such a good analogy for us, especially all as football fans, that I can process how that looks and feels now. I can plot cricket into that, and there is so much evidence, and Zach, there is more evidence of this becoming a thing, right? More teams like South Africa are cancelling these bilateral series to prioritise, or not cancel bilateral series, but controlling their players and making sure they're at their series. Is there more of that coming out now, right?
Yeah, I think yesterday the PCB announced they wouldn't be giving the... So basically, the way it works, I'm sure most people know, but in case you don't, to play in a league in another country, your board that you're contracted to has to give you a NOC. It's called a no objection certificate. So India never obviously grants them for players. That's why they can't play. And usually it's just kind of like a formality that you're allowed to play in a different league. So the PCB is banning players from going to the Big Bash, because the Big Bash is doing a different draft this year. There was talk that there were going to be, you know, Shaheen was going to be there, Rizwan was going to be there, and would have been huge for the Big Bash, but they're not going to now. And this is going to cause a big problem, because basically the PCB doesn't pay the players that much. They, you know, they're on quite a lot of money, but they're not going to be on anywhere near as much money as they could be if they can go freely to play in other leagues. So I think it's going to come to a head and potentially it might not even be a thing by the end of the year that they can't play. But keep an eye on Pakistan cricket relations, because I think that could be a big topic moving forward, and obviously relating to this.
That's a tasty one. Could we, you know, if we accept that this is going to happen, that we get this sort of club format, could players then become independent contractors away from their country? Are we going to see that sort of shift whereby David Warner is employed by, I'm using it as an example because he's trying to do this, I think, is not affiliated with Australia, isn't paying his wages every year. It's the Knight Riders franchise, and then he's released from that franchise to play for his country. Are we going to see that switch pretty soon, does anyone think?
I think we could do. I think the David Warner one's really interesting, because obviously the main thing with it is that the UAE League is going to be in the middle of the Big Bash. But David Warner hasn't played in the Big Bash for 10 years, has no affiliation with the league, because he doesn't play it. Australia are always playing during the Big Bash, which is kind of a bit of a problem. So Australia's best players never do, well, particularly their multi-format players. So he's wants to be able to play in this UAE league, but it would be huge for Australia to let him play in a league at the peak of their summer. Because in January, you know, it's the peak of the Australian summer. They usually have white ball series at that time. They also have the Big Bash going on. To allow him to just disappear and play in a different league would be something they're not going to do. But I think at his age, if it was in a year's time, he'd retire from international cricket, but because there's a home World Cup, he won't now, but next year he might.
That's really interesting. And that, I'm going to bring the golf analogy again. These players going off to the LIV Tour to earn their money, they're like, that league can't stop me. Well, they're not retiring from the PGA Tour. They're taking away their membership. It's a fascinating idea. And I didn't even know, in reading this piece, that we've got this. I knew about the South African League starting in January. We've got this, what's it called, International T20 League, that's happening in the UAE. So that then leaves us with the big block in January. We've got the IPL, which is somehow, why is it extending up to 2.5 months? Is there more teams coming, or do they just want more space?
I think there will be more teams.
That's why they're sort of nudging their elbows out a little bit. So that means we'll have this sort of January period of the Big Bash and South Africa and something else. The IPL in its window where no international cricket happens. We being England have the 100 in August. When's there time left for international cricket to happen? Will it happen? And you said, Will, that like it'll be punctuated with World Cups and important and top three teams test series or bilateral series, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's helpful to kind of take a little bit of a step back here, because first of all, I do have to take issue with our dear friend Tim Wingmore in that first sentence, which I quoted. Has this really been the golden age of international test cricket, or actually is the reason that franchise cricket has come into this gap because there are pretty systemic failings in the way that international cricket works? We're already kind of heading towards a place where test cricket is dominated by 3 or 4, maybe 5 top countries who all play each other because that's where the money is and that's what they want to do. We're already in a place where most of these other nations who are trying to start up their franchise leagues are doing so because they weren't really getting anything out of the old regime of international cricket. So that's why they have an interest to go and do that. So I don't think it's the case that international cricket was in this perfect bill of health and now franchise cricket is trying to have a revolution, turn it all over. That first point. The other thing that I think is interesting about this is that there are a range of different players who have power here, right? So you've got the national cricket boards, you've got players, and you've got your real franchise titans. And they all kind of want different things, and sometimes those things are in alignment, right? So in the obvious early days of franchise cricket, they, you know, teams owned by incredibly wealthy people who are able to pay massive salaries that you don't see anywhere else in cricket. Therefore, players have an obvious interest in going to play that league. Player power wins out. International teams aren't able to stop their players going to play the IPL. That's what we've seen. That makes total sense. Now we're in a place where national boards, like South Africa, you could argue, like England with the 100, feel like they're missing out on a piece of the pie. They know the money is in the franchise league, therefore they're trying to get into that. I don't know that any of that necessarily lends itself to what I appreciate looks like the logical conclusion of that progress, which is you end up at a 12-month club-style franchise cricket circuit. Is that really in the players' interests? Maybe. I'd suggest not for most of the players that would be playing international cricket, particularly test cricket. I don't think they want to go and play 12 months of franchise cricket. So, you know, I'm making a judgment here, but I think that at the point where you've got your IPL, your Big Bash, you know, your PSL deal, you're probably getting towards the point where you're happy if you're that kind of cricketer. On the other hand, if you're one of the franchise cricket circuit players who doesn't really have access to international cricket, if you're a Paul Sterling or a Rashid Khan, this is fantastic for you. Of course, this is what you'd want. So I don't know that it's quite the apocalyptic model of like, we're going to move from international cricket to 12-month franchise cricket. I think it's a bit more diverse than that and a bit more like, okay, there will be 12-month franchise cricket for that circuit of players, but that's not that dissimilar to what we have now. But you'll still have on top of that your top class international cricket for an increasingly small group of countries and players. But that's the trend we're seeing anyway.
Really good points, Will, and I completely agree. It's not necessarily going to benefit. I think the really interesting thing is when the Indian players come into it, because obviously there's talk about the Indian players potentially being allowed to, and it's kind of being allowed to play maybe for another team that's obviously owned by the same team. There's a, what's it called? The Delhi Capitals now have Pretoria Capitals and Dubai Capitals, which obviously doesn't work because Dubai is not the capital, which is obviously frustrating for everyone.
Yeah, but they've hamstrung themselves with that name.
Yeah,
they can only buy the team based in a capital now.
Well, can't they just be the Dubai Daredevils? Come on, guys, let's go back to basics. But the Indian players, obviously, at the moment, they have so much reliance on the BCCI allowing them to play in the IPL, basically. So, you know, say, I don't know why he's in my head, but say someone who doesn't necessarily play every game for India, Deepak Hooda is the only person I can think of that's kind of like in that kind of pretty decent in the IPL, but not. If he said, I want to go and play in other leagues, at this stage, they would just be like, fine, you can never play for India or the IPL. And because of the money in the IPL at this point, that's not going to work for him. But as these other leagues increase the amount of money they're getting, and if you get a 12-month contract, that means you play in other leagues, it kind of shifts the balance of power away from the BCCI and towards basically these owners who are obviously owning IPL teams. And it benefits the IPL team owners because then if they can have this continuity with their Indian players, which obviously is the biggest market, and international players as well, their brand is just going to go up and up and up. You look at RCB, for example, so much of their brand is we have Virat Kohli, basically. Chennai, we have MS Dhoni. So, and if they can do that and not it just be 2 months of a year, then it works so well for them.
It's such an interesting dynamic, and I'd be fascinated to see, because you're right, we're almost at that stage anyway where there is pretty much 12-month franchise cricket, but it's just that the IPL and the Big Bash sit above as an elite league. And I think Tim in his piece says that if we did move to this sort of club model, leagues would still dominate, a la the Premier League and La Liga, and other leagues would sit beneath that, and it would still work as a sort of system like that. Glenn, I want to hear your thoughts on this because, you know, to me, it feels like I don't want to lose international cricket. I'm so used to this calendar we've got where international cricket and then people go out to clubs. What would you think if all of a sudden we were at a stage where people played for clubs or franchises and got, you know, released for their international breaks, as it were, again, to bring this football analogy back?
Yeah, I'm just kind of meditating here and soaking up what's a really fascinating discussion and two really good pieces of writing from Tim Wigmore, which have kind of sparked this. I think we've, you know, Will, you've done a really nice job of kind of summing up who the stakeholders are here. I also think like cricket fans as well, it's worth like kind of just taking a step back and thinking about that. I mean, Dan, so you just said right from a personal perspective that, you know, you don't want international cricket to maybe fade away. And although that may be like maybe an extreme end of this, and I like Will trying to keep it a bit more circumspect and say, okay, it's part of this bigger picture. And you're right to say, Will, that the international cricket has been failing many countries. It's been benefiting, generally speaking, the kind of elite kind of, you know, your Australia, England, India for decades and decades now. We know that. Something that did jump out to me that was particularly depressing from one of Tim Wigmore's articles was a quote here: when Cricket West Indies hosted Sri Lanka and Bangladesh in 2018, it lost an extraordinary net 22 million from the two series. I mean, so where on earth could there be an incentive for West Indies to host smaller, kind of quote unquote, you know, it's kind of cricketing hierarchy terms, unfortunately, maybe, you know, from a TV perspective, less favored nations such as Sri Lanka and Bangladesh, if they're literally losing money to do it. So yeah, the current model is disproportionately benefiting the kind of cricketing giant nations, as you could argue. Yet at the same time, obviously, I do have really deep concerns about, you know, a very small kind of cartel well, arguably, of IPL franchise owners buying up effectively, I guess you could say, you know, franchise league real estate in other countries. I mean, A, from a fan perspective, to get back to my first point, it's going to be exceptionally boring. I don't want to see a watered-down IPL in South Africa or UAE or wherever else. What I loved about the PSL is that it had its own identity, that it obviously was vibrant. It was fun. I got to see some Pakistan domestic players I hadn't really watched much of before. The thought of seeing, for example, Riley Rousseau plying his trade for four different franchises across the world doesn't particularly interest me at all, right? It just doesn't do much for me. And I just do have this concern about a very small group of investors getting more and more and more wealthy by effectively extracting profit from other countries through this kind of contracted franchise model. So I do have deep concerns about that. So yeah, I'm kind of in the middle in the sense that, yeah, the current international kind of scheduling, it doesn't work. I'm also curious, I mean, maybe what you'll think here about players as well, right? So we've already had folks like Ben Stokes and others, for example, Johnny Best, I'm missing 100, stepping back because they can't simply keep up with the amount of international commitments with their franchise stuff as well. So they're having to, there's a kind of dialectic push and pull there. But you're just adding more and more franchises. You're not magicking up more and more equally high quality players. This is my concern. So who wants to watch a watered down IPL in somewhere else in the middle of the winter? I'm just not sure there's the base for that. And that, as Tim Wigmore says, that's why previous leagues, such as a previous attempt to build a T20 league in South Africa, did fail, because they realized the base of spectators wasn't necessarily there. So I just don't know if it's even going to necessarily function in maybe the way that this 12-month contract, it might sound so alluring for these owners, but where's the base? You know, where's the maybe international fan base to watch these games?
100%. I think that's a great point. And also, what these guys seem to think is that once you've bought up a couple of franchise leagues and you're like, okay, we're at the point where people love watching T20 cricket in the IPL, the Big Bash, a couple of other leagues around the world, right? And they make this argument, it's like, that's what people want to watch. That's what gets the TV numbers. That doesn't go on for an infinite length of time, right? As Glenn is saying, you hit a point where there's saturation, right? There's only so much franchise cricket you can take before fans are just like, well, I watched the IPL this year. I watched the Big Bash. You know, maybe I've gone to some 100 games. Like, why are you then tuning in to see the same set of players in January in T20 league? It's just not going to happen. But the interest there is absolutely clear, which is that these owners, as Glenn is saying, want as much of that market as humanly possible. Because this is why they're saying things like, oh, the 100 needs to open itself up to private investment, right? They're looking for new sites of accumulation. They're looking for more places they can make a profit, dominate the entire world. And I think it is important to say that, you know, the tone of Tim's piece, and I'm not criticizing him for this because I think it's the tone that lots of people have when they look at the situation, is, well, this is just the logic of what's happening, right? And in some ways it is, right? It's an extrapolation of trends that we've seen. But it is important for fans to look at their own national boards and say, well, you know, these are not just like natural trends, right? These are decisions that people are making. Boards at some point have to stand up for themselves if they want international cricket to be a thing, right? And you can't just kind of roll over and be like, oh, well, there's lots of eyeballs on T20. These billionaire owners internationally want access to our markets. Let's open up the 100 and let them buy a team, right? That's how you end up with the Premier League logic in football, which is like, well, football's now a business. We have to get all this investment 10 years down the line, 20 years down the line. You've got Roman Abramovich owning a club, right? You've got complete disasters. You've got the Saudi prince owning Newcastle, right? Does cricket want to be in that situation? I would suggest not, in which case national boards have to actually make some decisions and recognize their own power here.
To your point there on saturation, and it's true, isn't it? Because it's almost like whatever league got here first, the IPL, is just going to always stay at the top. There's just the hierarchy feels set, and there doesn't feel like there's any room for any more. Was there an old South African league then? And this is like a relaunched one they're doing coming up. Is that what this is? Because I don't remember that old South African league.
They've tried it about five times and not.
And what do they expect? And what do they expect to happen this time then? Because they're retaining their players by calling the series off, they're expecting more interest from it, right? Or is it just going to be the same situation again?
No. They've just sold all the franchises to IPL owners, so it'll be fine this time. Oh, so they've got money
behind because of that. But actual interest will wane or be the same.
Yeah, I think interestingly, you talk about saturation, and I completely understand that from kind of like our view of it. I love cricket. I love franchise cricket, but I do get fed up sometimes of it constantly being on. We've had the discussion many times. There is too much cricket. Simple as. But Do we think everyone else feels this way? I know a lot of people in England potentially do, but like, say you're an Indian fan and you are a Delhi Capitals fan. We've already mentioned them today. Say you're a massive Delhi Capitals fan. I want to be able to see Delhi Capitals play more than 2 months a year. Like, so I'm a Yeovil Town fan. I don't want to just watch Yeovil 2 months of the year. To be honest, I don't really want to ever watch them because they're so bad. But I would want to watch them. Go on, Will. Sorry.
Well, here's what I would say then. Would you rather watch essentially an 8-month-long Yeovil preseason tour of countries around the world?
Potentially not. No, I mean, it might be more exciting than watching them, you know, away at Scunthorpe on Saturday, though.
I just think so. I mean, I've said this before in relation to the IPL, that I think they're starting to. I think that, you know, obviously the pandemic, of course, changed things. And, you know, they went into the bubble that first year, totally understandably. But we've now had, you know, you had a gap of like 2.5 years without any cricket in the vast majority of stadiums around India. I think they're getting a bit complacent about the way that, you know, like Glenn is saying about the PSL, like a huge part of the brand is it's vibrant, it's exciting, you know, it has its own culture and its own life. And yeah, of course, the TV deals are a huge part of that, but I don't think you can just sell this kind of totally sanitized commercial product around the world and expect people to tune into that. Maybe I'm wrong, but I just don't believe it.
Well, how about the US market and that launching? Is that this year, Glenn nodding, next 2023, you know, is that not a market of people that would be keen on this and they kind of understand that already?
Well, I mean, yeah, potentially, as we've discussed, you know, on our special podcast about cricket in America, which I was delighted to make. And we heard from some really, really informative voices in the US game. You know, obviously, you know, T20 is going to be the model to maybe introduce cricket to nations, i.e. the US, where it isn't a huge part of the current sports space. So, yeah, T20 itself, absolutely. But, yeah, I do have this concern that, as I kind of touched on earlier, that it's just, you know, we've got the Knight Riders investing in Major League Cricket over here again, you know, due to start next year. It does kind of feel like a lot of, you know, a select group of owners have seen how ridiculously profitable the IPL is, right? It is an absolute, you know, franchise. The IPL is growing on a bigger, the brands are growing on a quicker and bigger level than NFL brands at this point. Like IPL, if you own an IPL team, that, you know, the growth is almost unlimited. It's at this moment in time. So it does just feel like it's just this select group of people looking for new frontiers of capital, right? For new places to kind of come in, run these leagues. And okay, well, if in the US context, sure, you might get a couple of people, as you kind of touched on, Zach, who, you know, Kolkata Knight Riders, okay, well, there's no IPL season, we can turn to the US and watch some cricket there. But for fans, you know, I'm really intrigued. I don't have a magic answer here, but I'm really intrigued to see, you know, domestic fans in these countries, South Africa, and maybe the US especially, like, is there going to be a connection? Okay, well, there's a kind of maybe a Kolkata Knight Riders franchise, say in California, for example. You know, what are maybe just Californian kind of sports fans gonna say about that? They might not have this kind of huge attachment to this kind of giant wide infrastructure of a certain franchise. So could that potentially be alienating? Or I don't know if they're maybe overselling the brand in places where there isn't the connection, because obviously in the IPL, absolutely. And yeah, is the football kind of parallel with the Oval's interesting as well, Zach. But I was like, yeah, where are the bases of fans going to be? I'm just really intrigued at this point. But yeah, I am a little bit apprehensive as well that we're just going to get cookie cutter leagues that just end up being very disposable, being very transactional and disposable, and there not being a huge amount of real, again, you know, vibrancy and character to some of these leagues. That's my worry at the minute.
Do you think, Glenn, though, it could go the other way potentially? Say you're a fan of the Kentucky Knight Riders from Major League Cricket.
How long were you thinking of a state beginning with K to do that? I saw you glaze over for a minute.
I was trying to think of a place very in California good. And then was like, no, don't know enough places in California because we'd mentioned California. So say you're a fan of the Kentucky Knight Riders and you want to, and then you watch, say, first year of Major League Cricket, you get into cricket, you watch it, and then you could easily then, oh, you switch on your TV a few months later, the IPL's on. Oh, it's a Knight Riders team. Oh, obviously that's the team I'll support, kind of thing. It could potentially go the other way. I completely agree. I think it probably won't, but there is a potential that there's some people who would be, you know, gain the affiliation and then keep it going.
That's what these owners are thinking, right? That's what they want to happen.
Well, yeah, that's their Yeah, their best case scenario. Exactly. It's exactly having almost, you know, growing in a different country, and then in a, you know, in a way kind of redirecting some of that traffic, some of those new fans back to the kind of pole, which in this case would be, which would be India. So it's, yeah, it's interesting. It's such a great debate. I'm just, yeah, I am on the apprehensive side. And but yeah, and I mean, I would love to, it would be great if we could, you know, chat to some fans. The South African League, I'm really interested by, just because of its previous kind of succession of failures, which didn't even get to the one before this. They didn't even get a bowl ball. They just gave up before the tournament had even started. So I'm really intrigued to see, you know, again, this is, you know, for we're four guys generally speaking with a kind of love for cricket in England, and obviously with Will, you know, we have got a great connection to the IPL and we're fans of that. But for, you know, South African fans looking at this new league, are they going to want this attachment to an IPL, or would they say, well, the IPL is great, but we really do want to do our own thing? We want to have, you know, South African owners and South African teams. I'd be really intrigued. Or does it not matter? Do they want, and this is what I think some of the IPL owners are kind of hoping, do they just not want the best calibre of cricketer possible? And to make that happen, you're going to need Kolkata Knight Riders funding. That's where they're going with a Major League Cricket model, I think, where we are going to need huge flows of capital to ensure the quality of cricket's good. If it works, fantastic. But if it doesn't, you're left with a lot of losing a lot of money at a really quick pace. And then, and my final thing I'll say, if, you know, IPL owners in South Africa, in the USA, wherever else, if they decide, well, this was a wash, this isn't profitable, and withdraw all that capital, you're almost left in a worse place from when you started. You've gone back 10 steps then, because in your country, this domestic league's been seen as a failure. And that has consequences beyond one league. That has consequences for growing the sport for the next decade.
I think, Glenn, a very good point to end on there, to leave our listeners to go away and think. And how do you feel? Are you in one of these countries with one of these leagues coming up? Would you want that? Do you want it to be South African cricket teams for South Africans? Do you want to get really Brexity about it? Or are you happy with this IPL influence? I don't know. I didn't mean to get all nationally there. Do let us know. You can follow us on Twitter at RainstopPod. And on there you will find, and I should have this at the top, but we'll see how many people we get actually listening to the end of our podcast. The FPL League's open. And the prize this year is to come and talk to us for an hour. So no wonder it's going to be a huge league. Do join us. We love our fantasy football. And it'd be a pleasure to have you on board for the next year. But I think that'll about do for this one, boys. An enjoyable catch up. A great chat about the state of cricket. And I'm sure that won't be the last of this big what is going on with international cricket. Where's it going to sit? There is too much cricket chat. So that'll do. But Will, thank you for joining us. Great chatting with you.
Thank you.
Glenn, thank you very much.
Cheers.
And Zach, I bid you farewell.
Thank you, Dan. Just quickly, were you saying there's too much cricket and we're going to chat about it, or is there too much cricket chat?
No, there's never too much cricket chat. There is too much cricket. Good.
We'd be out of a job.
There's probably yeah, out of a job. In fact, I'm going to slip that. There isn't enough cricket chat. We need more cricket chat. So do join us for more cricket chat over the rest of the year, of course. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back very soon. Goodbye.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.